and welcome to my podcast. If you don't know much about it, I am Daniela. I am from Republic of Moldova or Moldavia, however you want to call it. I consider myself Romanian, however, I was born in Moldova. We're not gonna go into the details or politics of it, it doesn't matter. I just wanted to explain the name of the podcast. I live abroad, I'm from Moldova, hence Moldovan Abroad. But I interview people from all sorts of walks of life. I interview people from various backgrounds, various cultures, various nationalities. There are no limits. So all I want to know is a good story, an interesting story. I'm curious about people and I want to share these stories with you. So today's guest is Ruxandra Lungu. She is also from Moldova. She's a scientist and she's also an artist. So it's an interesting conversation about how these two worlds collide. We talked about neuroscience. We talked about brain plasticity, about travel, about living in Portugal, about art, of course. We talked a little bit about a lot. And I really hope you'll enjoy it. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Please also check Ruxandra's art page. It's so, so beautiful. I'll leave all the details in the description. I hope you enjoy this episode and let us know what you think about it. Hi, Ruxandra. Welcome to my podcast.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
That's okay. Do you know what? I've been stalking you on Instagram and I thought it would be very, very cool to have a conversation with you, although we don't know each other personally. When we started talking, I think you were in Japan, if I'm not mistaken. Were you having a trip in Japan at the time?
Yes. Like it was really bad timing at the time because we had the hour gap, right? Because in Japan it's much earlier than here. But yeah, indeed, I had a little trip last year to Japan and I had this dream to visit. I really love that culture and I had the feeling that it would be very different than what I'm used to. And when I arrived there, I realized that it's even more different than what I was expecting. I enjoyed it so much that this year I'm going again.
Are you? Oh, amazing. This is why I wanted to touch on it because I've never been. I'm very curious about it. So I wondered if you can tell us some highlights. What did you enjoy the most? And obviously you loved it so much that you want to go back. So what are the main highlights that impressed you?
I always enjoyed to know about Japan because, yeah, as I said, it feels that it's so different. They are super organized. And that was a big confirmation when I went there because it's the most populated city in the world, right? And you imagine that it will be a chaos. You see that the Shibuya crossing, that thousands of people cross it every day. It's in the center of Japan. And it's a lot of people, but it's so well organized. And everything works so perfectly. The public transport is the most on point in the world. Everything works so well. And I was wondering, how do they do it? And I really had this feeling like people respect each other so much that things work well because there is space for everyone to adapt to the environment, you know? And of course, it wasn't suddenly organized. It was a working process of that culture. But it's really amazing to see that. And, you know, Europe, it's a mess. We are a lot here. Everybody does what they want. And of course, there is respect between people here. But there, I felt it at a higher level. Like, really, I really enjoyed that, mainly.
So just to give the people who are watching a bit of background, you're currently based in Portugal, in Lisboa. How long have you been there for?
25?
Oh, wow.
No, 23 years. Yeah, 23.
Wow, it must feel like, I don't know, it must feel like you know everything in there. You probably are so in tune with everything that is happening there. I visited a few times. I really, really loved it. What I found, obviously, the colors for us as artists, everything is so beautiful and colorful. I love the food. I love pastéis de nata. What else did I like? I liked a lot of things, but when I started doing a bit of research, I found that although the prices seem cheap when you go as a tourist, generally speaking, I don't think that the balance of what you earn versus what you have to spend, especially for rent, it felt a little bit unbalanced and it felt a bit expensive to live there, basically, what I'm trying to say. How do you find it in general?
Yeah, it wasn't like this a few years ago. I think it completely went off the road, I don't know, 5 years ago, in a more extreme way, but it was increasingly having this imbalance. And right now it's really difficult for the locals to live here. It's amazing for tourists, even though I wouldn't say it's so the prices are that cheap. There are some restaurants that still practice the old prices, but Lisbon city center, it's already pretty, I don't know, Paris level, London level of prices for housing, for food, for everything. So things are changing a lot here. Portugal in general wasn't that famous a few years ago. The tourism really increased in the last few years, and I think that's the main trigger for what's happening here. And indeed, for us, like the young people, it's really hard to buy a house. To I feel like it's happening everywhere in a bit, but here it's the discrepancy about how it was before and how's now. It really went off the road as it was supposed to. So a lot of young people are immigrating, you know, qualified people who study here, who mainly medical students, I don't know, research mainly. So I work in research. Most of my colleagues are moving out to maybe just for a few years, but it's really hard to do research in Portugal.
I can imagine. What I'm curious about, though, what particularly attracted you to Portugal and what do you still enjoy in there?
Yeah, so my father was a military, and he's a very strategic person. And I think moving to Portugal, he thought that okay, it's still Europe, but it's the furthest away possible from Moldavia and for all the problems that they had at the time. And I think it was mostly in that sense. And in the 2000 early 2000, Portugal was had a lot of opportunities. European Union had just invested here, and there was a lot of work in construction and a lot of non-qualified jobs maybe. And yeah, my parents, even though they were qualified, they well, you know, like all most of Moldavians have had this issue when the I mean, our parents' generation that really had to immigrate. For us, the situation is a little bit different. The second generation of immigrants. But yeah, I think it was mostly strategic in geographically, but also because of work opportunities. And they got really well here in Portugal. With time, they established. They are super well integrated in the culture. They have all the Portuguese friends and everything. They're, you know, I feel like, well, I wouldn't say it's specific to Moldavians or Romanians or whatever. But when people immigrate, they tend to cluster in little communities of people from that country. It happens with the Portuguese, happens with everybody. And I feel like my parents tried to not focus, like, of course, they have a lot of Moldavian friends in here in Portugal, but they always tried to also integrate in the culture here. And it was very good for me as well. I feel like I'm part of both cultures, Portuguese and Moldavian, but not really from any of them, because when I go to Moldavia, I don't feel like I'm from there either. And here I always feel like, especially because my name is so different, even it's weird just even from Moldavia. And here in Portugal it's always like, because they don't have the X sound,
Right, I
In
didn't know that.
Portuguese, you read it sh. So
Right. So
my name is Ruxanda, and they call me Ruxanda at the first in the first instance. So
okay.
I always have to explain my origins and everything. So that's always like this trigger to, well, usually it goes well because I know how to deal with the situation. But
Yeah.
yeah.
And to introduce people to a little country named Moldova.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So that's very interesting. I feel for you and I feel like you because I feel the same when I go back to Moldova. I don't feel like I'm fully integrating there. When I'm in another country, I also don't feel I try to adapt to the country where I live. I try to, you know, to learn as much as I can, but I still don't have that full background of being here, for example. So I totally understand. You were saying about early about research. So let's touch a little bit on your main job, I suppose. You are a scientist doing research for I don't know if we should name the company or not, but I know that they deal, from what I've been reading, it's more in the domain of neuroscience and cancer research. Is that right? Okay.
Exactly.
How did you get into this kind of field and what do you do? Generally speaking, if you'd like to explain to us, what do you do?
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't say that I always dreamed about this job. Like, I figured along the way what I really like, and because I always had issue of separating what I like to do, what I should do, what gives you money, what gives you stability, what you really enjoy. You know, of course, it's hard for everyone to figure this out. But here in Portugal, in school, after the ninth grade, we have to do a psychological test to decide if we should go to the science field, economics, humanities, so languages, or art.
Mm-hmm.
And I did three different tests, and all of them gave me 50-50 for science and art.
Wow.
And really couldn't choose. It was very hard for me. So at the time, my parents gave me the advice of try to be more logical and go for science, because if I want to change later, I could always go to art, and the reverse is more difficult. So that's what I decided to do. But so along the way, I found out that I really enjoy the life in general, how our planet works. So I went to biology, general biology, and already being when I was there, I found out that I really enjoy genetics. So I went for a master's degree in Paris. It's the Magister Européen de Génétique. It's like it's an European master's because it's beside it being accepted everywhere, you also have a component of doing a lot of internships in Europe. And in the first year, even in the US. So it's what I did. I really enjoyed that. Master was super complete, super hard, actually, because I didn't have a break in those 2 years. So in the first year, I went to the US at the Duke University to do an internship of the master thesis of the first part. So I was already having this experience of living in Paris and learning about this new culture, which I really enjoyed. I love those 2 years in Paris. I love Paris. Every time I have an opportunity to go there, I always go. And then in the US, I really had like a shock of cultures because, so, okay, so this is really like in the movies. Like, it's exactly how we see it, the houses, the everything, how the people. And I did enjoy it a lot, and I considered to stay there for the PhD after to continue that project. But then I went back to Paris, and I decided that I was away from home for too long, and I wanted to go back and be with my family, with the boyfriend at the time, and everything. Like, at the personal level, it have it more. And I was thinking that if I would go for 5 years to do a PhD in the US, I wouldn't come back anymore. So it was a bit dramatic, but yeah, so I came back to Portugal and here I am doing my PhD, already almost finishing at this institution. So I'm working in the neuroscience field. I have a project that it's related to genetics of neurodegenerative diseases, mainly Parkinson's. And because so I didn't really I when I did my internship in the US, they gave me a little project on an ongoing bigger project already. So I started that one and I really enjoyed it, and I wanted to continue those same ideas. And when I came here, I presented my boss work. He liked it, and I ended up continuing what I was doing. So yeah, it wasn't like a that's a dream job when you are 5 and you always know that you want to be, I don't know, a veterinarian or something. So I figured out along the way. It's not like
That's absolutely fine. I think the more you grow, the more you learn to know yourself. And I really love this idea that you take psychological tests to understand more about yourself and understand where actually your skills and your way of being, your personality would suit to choose a career in. It's super, super interesting because a lot of people end up not enjoying their jobs and things like that. So your experiences, kept attracting other experiences, which is very interesting. So I didn't know you're doing a PhD. Very well done on that. What is your research subject? So, and I would like to touch a little bit on neuroscience because I think that it's a very unexplored kind of field in general. So more and more studies are going into it. It's a fascinating field. I am curious about it. I don't know much about it, but I just know that there's so much to it. And obviously, we don't understand ourselves fully how our brains work. So it will be super interesting to learn a bit from your subject that you chose for your PhD and a little bit more about this field, if you can share with us.
I'm a biologist, right? I learned a little bit about the different species that habitate this world, and they are super interesting. Like there are animals that can do several things with their brains, with their eyes, that we cannot do. But indeed, the human being—it was the one that really fascinated me the most, and specifically the brain, how our brain works, and we know so little actually about what's going on here, and the capacity of the brain, and how certain diseases can affect the capacity that we know we have. And actually, so there's a thing in genetics of when you want to study what a gene does, usually what you do is to remove the gene and see what happens when he's not there. It's called a knockout technique of in genetics. So it's what we do actually when we study some diseases. We try to understand what happens when the disease is there, and that helps us a lot to understand how actually everything works. Because it's so applied science helps us to understand the basic science that we know so little yet. And specifically in Parkinson's disease, it's a disease that it's multifactorial. It has a component of genetics, but also the environment that, so what we do along in our life, how we eat, what the sports we practice, how our job, it really interferes a lot with the genetics that it's already there. So there are at least 27 genes that can interact between them, or if they are damaged somehow, they can cause the disease. So my job is mainly to understand what happens when I remove some of these genes, and I'm focusing mostly in two of them. One more aggressive than the other, and to try to understand how the brain connectivity and the activity of the brain is affected by these genes. So I use MRI, so magnetic resonance imaging, in a preclinical field. So I use mice. So I just to put a context, in the research, we use a lot mice, rats, flies, and zebrafish to study a lot of diseases, or even basic science, basic genetics. It's the most used animals. Well, there are others, but these are the most used. So I use the mice. I have a transgenic line of these mice that mimic somehow the Parkinson's disease. So they also have some tremor. They also have the dopamine deficiency that causes the disease. So I use them to try to understand the brain activity and how it's affected in the over the progression of the disease, because it's something that progresses with age as well. So yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be too complex. I don't know really how to this general public. So
I'm quite fascinated. So you can talk, you can keep talking as much as you want about it, because obviously this is how we learn. You were saying also there are certain external factors that can affect, I suppose, such as diet and physical activity and so on. Other things that can be done to improve the chances of not getting this kind of diseases. And in that, I would like to also include learning and doing more activities in general, because I heard this thing that the more you learn in life, the more you put yourself to new circumstances, new kind of challenges, and the better you develop your brain, and the better you can increase your chances to not get such diseases as Parkinson's, as Alzheimer's, and so on. Is there any truth to it or any relevance into this field?
Yes, mainly the food. Like I'm always also learning this, but the food has some a major impact on our health in general. And lately we have been finding that there is a correlation between our brain activity with the gut. So there are specific bacteria that are good for us, and the food that we eat and how it's processed, how it ends up in our body can really affect this kind of bacteria that will communicate then through the neuronal network. And the information that it gets to the brain, it can so they correlate and it can be affected. So more and more research has been done in how depression affects I don't know gastric diseases and how gastric diseases can cause depression or schizophrenia or other, you know. So mainly I would say that the food, the diet, it's super important. We are still learning how diets work and what's good for us, what's not. There are some studies about vegan diets, vegetarian diets, raw meat diets, and we are still learning. I'm not saying that there is the perfect diet that works for everyone. That's for sure not the case. And also, the altitude, where we are located geographically, can also influence that. So we should always adapt our diet to the
Local.
geographically where we eat. And of course, the stress is the major impact. And our society and some areas that are overpopulated, not well organized, it's super complicated to deal with that daily and control the stress. And I believe that, of course, in major cities, it's much more difficult to control for this kind of impact in our health. But if we try, if we maintain a healthy lifestyle, even in cities, it's possible. If we really force ourselves to exercise, to eat well, to be in contact with other people, the community is super important, even for long ages, you know, doing things not expecting something in return, you know, like voluntarily do stuff for the community. That's already proven to be a very good fact, a good factor for longevity and run away from certain disease. Yeah, that's.
So that reminds me, I watched documentary on Netflix, but it's not that the only thing that I watched. I think I watched something on the BBC as well. I think it's called something like Live to 100 or something like that. And the main factors that they were studying certain geographical areas in different countries, different cultures. What are the main factors that help people to have such longevity? And main ones were good diet. I mean, usually it's high in fiber, I guess, high in fruit and veg and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter though, because you're saying, and it's just, we're still learning about what diet kind of works the best, but it certainly is not fast food mainly kind of diet.
Processed.
And then they were saying also about community work, as you're saying, having a purpose in life, working together with a community, being generally physically active, even if they weren't doing weightlifts and things like that, they're super active in general, you know, walking up and down the stairs, walking up and down the hills, moving around, which is so important. I think nowadays, especially with so many office jobs, we just forget to move. We are so stuck to our chairs that it's, I read an article saying that sitting for so long in a day, it's the new smoking kind of thing. So yeah, it's very interesting. I'm very passionate about this thing, so it's super interesting to touch on this. And you were mentioning something about big cities and being organized. I suppose this is where your fascination with Tokyo. You've been to Tokyo, right?
Yeah, so last time I only visited Tokyo and some cities around. I went to Mount Fuji because I only went there for a week, and I decided to not explore so much and stay in a small place, just in Tokyo, and really enjoy it with time to feel like I really knew Tokyo. And this time I'll go there. Actually, I'm going for a congress because of work. The congress, it will be in South Korea, in Seoul. So I'll be staying there for a week. So congress and a few days more. And then the plane ticket, it's so close that it was like a pity not to go there again.
Amazing.
And, and I decided to go and explore the rest of Japan. So this time will be Kyoto, Osaka, Nara. So, well, stay tuned on my Instagram.
Yes.
pop out.
Definitely, definitely. But then I was going to ask you, because you mentioned about being, you like that they're so organized. Is that one of the main characteristics for yourself? Because you're also doing art, which we'll touch upon very soon. Are you an organized person? Do you like being organized?
So I think about me, the main organization I usually do in my head, it's like long-term organization. Mm-hmm. I need to know what I'm going to do next year or in 5 years, to have an idea, to project myself. I want to do things with a purpose in a long-term perspective. In a short-term perspective, I'm organized inside my mess, you know. I know where things are, I know how things work. So I think I'm a mix in this sense. But I definitely like my organization in a broader perspective.
Organized mess, that's definitely my definition of. I also like being organized, but also sometimes it's, as you're saying, I kind of know where everything is, but it's just like my own type of being organized. You were saying very interestingly that your personality test said that you're 50% artist, 50% scientist, which is super interesting, because a lot of the times, a lot of people don't kind of marry them two together. And to me, it's super fascinating as well. And in fact, I find that it's even better, because the more you understand science, the more you can apply it in art, which some people don't think about art in a scientific way. But I find there is a lot of that into art as well, because obviously you experiment with materials and shapes and structures and so on. I find that they go very well together. And that was also one point of me wanting to interview you about that as well. I absolutely love your art. It's really beautiful. It's very subtle. You definitely combine colors in such a beautiful way. I've seen that you do portraits as well. Your main page was mainly on abstract art. So for starters, I thought you're only doing abstract art, but you're also doing portraits. So obviously in portraits, you need to understand proportions and things like that, that they can get quite mathematical at some point as well. I'm not sure where I'm going with this. I keep talking and talking. There is no actual question in here. Let's start with the fact of how you merged into art after, because you're saying you did a strategic choice. of going with science first because you can't switch to art. But then you found, and this is why I was asking about you being organized. You found, I think, the magical formula of being a scientist and introducing art as well into your life. So for that in my head, you have to be organized to do both of them. But how did you merge into art? Let's start with this question. And then we'll switch to the other link because I don't think we'll have enough time on this meeting.
Okay. So art somehow was always present in my life, even though in the 10th grade, I went to the scientific field. So by the Christmas time, everybody remembered that I do portraits or something. And I always made my little money, you know, with doing some portraits. It wasn't something that I would really invest. I would just do. I don't know how mathematical is that for me, because since I always did that, for me, it comes naturally to find the proportions. But I never really studied. So I was afraid of introducing color, for example. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to do it, and contrasts. And at some point I started to read some stuff about drawing, but I would say the drawing part was always the natural thing that I would do. And already being at this point in my life, when I was already doing research and studying for 10 years and everything was very scientific, I felt the need of having, I wouldn't say an escape, because I really enjoy my job. It's not like I need to do something to run away from this. But sometimes I need to not think about this, because it's very hard to just separate the daily thinking, because the job here is always making questions and experiment things. Like, the main job is to experiment and see what happens and see if this leads to another questions. And that's what we do in science. And the arts, it's exactly the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about colors. And I think I was at some point in my life when I felt like I need some change. I need to risk. And of course, it's not a big risk, but introducing myself to the painting and the abstract art, I really felt like I was experimenting in the most pure way. Because here at work, we always have to consider the previous research that was done, the money it will require to do that experiment, that it can be very innocent and very, but you cannot just try just because you have to study it before. And in art, it was more spontaneous, I felt. And I really felt the need at the time to do that. That was just 2 years ago, yeah. That I introduced myself to the painting itself, because before that I would only do drawings, so portraits mainly. And at some point I also did some scientific illustration. Mm-hmm. When I was already in the university, there was my course gave me. So here in Portugal, I think in most countries it's organized like this. Like, every course, every discipline, it counts ECTS. So I had some points to gain from an extra course that was not related to my biology degree. So I chose at the time arts, because it was next to the university, and they gave me those points for the scientific illustration course. So I decided to, at the time, I was already trying to introduce more seriously the scientific illustration. And I did some at the time, but as I said, not with color, just pencil, you know. And now in the last 3 years, I'm starting to explore more this part of the abstract. I'm starting to learn how the business work, how people do it in general. I didn't start thinking about the money, but then people say, oh, why don't you sell it? How you should invest in an Instagram page or something. So the truth is that it's actually going well. People are buying. So it means that they like what I do. So I'm excited about this too. And more I'm thinking of making it more 50-50, not 70-30, you know. I don't know what's going to be the next step in my scientific career. Mm-hmm. Because I'm finishing the PhD and I don't know if I should go to industry or the clinics, or I'm still figuring out. And As I told you, I really like to know what's going on before, and I'm passing through an anxiety moment right now. But I hope in a year I will have things more straightly organized in my head, and hopefully I will be able to manage both in a more with a more equilibrium. But yeah.
I'm sure you'll figure it out because sometimes things they just flow. And I guess when you it I understand I'm a bit like you. I want to know and I want to be structured and organized and I want to know which direction I'm going to. But sometimes it's just nice to leave more room for more opportunity. Things that you didn't even imagine, they would just happen because sometimes when you have this tunnel vision and you keep too strictly to it, it feels like you are ignoring other opportunities. So who knows? But I understand the need of being also, structured and being like, I need to know what I'm doing next year. You were saying an interesting thing. You're saying you were scared of trying color. And yet to me, when I looked at your page, I was fascinated by the way you use color. So it's very interesting. I wanted to just say quickly that sometimes where your fear lies, this is where actually your strength lies as well. It's a very interesting thing because I'm very fascinated by the colors that you're using. They're very subtle, very beautiful. They go very well together. So I just wanted to pay you this compliment, first of all. And I'm glad that you overpassed that fear and you started using color because it's very, very beautiful. And I'm glad that you started selling your art. It's very good as well. And for people who will be interested, I will leave all your details, so your Instagram pages, so that they can check your art as well. Talk me through the process then, now that you're using color. Do you get inspiration? Because I saw, I think, one of your stories saying that you find inspiration everywhere, which I think, I mean, with me, it's the same. I think as artists, you kind of find inspiration in the most unexpected places. How do you start the thought process of a painting? Do you go and choose the colors? Do you get inspiration from somewhere first? Do you just put the blank canvas and you just think, what colors shall I use today? How does your process go in terms of producing a painting?
Yes, of course, I follow a lot of artists and see what techniques they do, what colors I enjoy most seeing. I do what I like to see. Maybe other people don't like this kind of art, but I would say that here comes a bit of my personality in the sense of we talked at the beginning of this our meeting about my fascination about Japan, for example. And they have this concept of wabi-sabi and looking for imperfection inside what we think is perfect. And yes, I don't know what happened 2 years ago, but I really wanted to start exploring, risking in the sense of looking for if things are not so perfect, if this is not strictly aligned, how would it look like? And in this sense, I started to explore more the beauty in the imperfection, and the nature itself, it's beautifully imperfect. And I studied a bit about botanics when I started my biology degrees about other animals, as I was saying. And there is a lot to what I like about it. It's when it's not perfect, there is always something new to discover in that painting of if we pay attention in this art with a bit of sparkle here or relief here, or you feel like you're always enjoying something new in that painting. And I try to explore that in these paintings, even though the painting is all black and there are details in golden or white, for example. I tr try to put things what people don't expect to find in it. So I think that's the way that I try to follow.
I loved what you said because it's so true. Nature is so beautifully imperfect, and a lot of people are just obsessed with perfection, but that's not natural in a way. And I love how you explore this theme as well. I wanted to ask you about your textures though, because I was looking at the textures that you're creating. Are you using a modeling paste? How are you creating those textures?
It's a complete trial and error and see what happens. I don't so I tried to visualize in the beginning more or less what I want to do, the flow that the painting would get, but the paste itself, I try to use different materials to see what kind of different textures I can do. So I use sand, I use spatules or different kind of materials that I'm still buying and experimenting, and see how it will look like. So I never know how the painting will end up. Sometimes I finish it and I look at it and I hate it. So I put a totally different color on top. I do something completely new from it. So some paintings I have there have layers and layers of different experiments. So that's the fun part, you know. I don't stress too much. The thing that I like about the painting, I think, is that I don't stress too much with the outcome, because so I have this the good part is that I don't depend on it. So my money doesn't come from the paintings, come from the science. So since I don't have this pressure on me that most of artists have of selling, of having to pay bills, and these really have to go well or the first time or something, you know, and I don't have this pressure. So for me, it goes more, it goes very naturally, you know. So, yeah.
Amazing. I saw that you quite like big canvases as well. I really love big canvases. I'm very fascinated by your work.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm really exploring and risking doing bigger and bigger. You know, I started with the small canvases and I always feel like this should be bigger.
Very
and,
good.
Sometimes I do something in a small proportion and someone likes it, wants to buy it, and says that, oh, but at my place, something bigger, exactly like this would look better. So sometimes I repeat. Well, it's impossible to repeat a painting, but I try to do the same style, but in a more or less the same textures, and try to recreate it in a similar way, but bigger, usually.
Yeah, because I find that abstract art usually kind of is more effective if it's on bigger canvases. So I love that. What else did I want to ask you? Oh, about your art exhibition. I've seen you had an art exhibition.
That was very spontaneous, actually. It was not planned. It was it was at a friend's company. They had this open space where usually people cross that area daily. And he told me, like, why don't you have some space here? Let's make this space a bit beautiful and put your canvases here. Maybe this will go well for you. We don't know. And yeah, it was a completely improvised thing. It was nothing like very serious, very professionally art exhibitions, you know, that I don't even know how they work and who do you have to talk with to start getting inside the business. I know. So it was a very personal thing.
But you enjoyed it. That's what matters.
Yes, it was very fun.
Very, very good. I am very impressed by everything you do. And I'm so glad we had this opportunity to talk today. Is there anything that you want to talk about that I didn't touch upon, that you're thinking you want to add or anything like that? An area that I don't know about from your Instagram and you want to discuss about, maybe?
I don't know. So I see it's you also have this side job, let's call it, and to talk with people and get to know them and see different life stories, how people, and especially Moldavians abroad, right? So I've met some people like me that also have this experience of them to being culturally diverse, you know, to come from a culture, having to adapt to another one, and then in the adulthood, they moved somewhere and learned something even new. And I feel like that's so good that does so well to our brains, like to move out of your comfort zone and adapt to new cultures, but really not just visiting, you know, but one thing is to be a tourist and go and see, oh, this is really different. But when you live some time in a culture and you really have to adapt, learn the language, and it's, for me, it's really fascinating our brain plasticity and how we can really enjoy or not other cultures, and how can we integrate it in our personality, and how this actually changes our personality. And I'm really sure that in English I'm a different person than I am when I speak in Portuguese, when I speak in Moldavian or in Russian or in French. You know, it's very, we gain some unique features from that culture that really molds our personality, and I find this very interesting. And I don't think I'm gonna, I don't know, but maybe I will change to a different country soon. And I'm always excited about that. I'm not afraid about that. And I think, you know, we have been talking only about me, but I'm sure your life story also have a lot of things that you had to deal with that shaped your personality. And I think that's fascinating.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing this. Thank you so much for embracing these parts that formed you as well, and for embracing multiculturalism and experiencing all these things and being open to these experiences. Because I am very similar in that way indeed. So I like to explore and move to countries and learn and get to know people. And I love that it's very relevant to your work as well. So it was super, super interesting to get to know you better. We will be following you to see your new adventures, to see where life takes you after your PhD. Good luck with that. And then, yeah, I'll talk to you hopefully soon to see how is your Japan trip and what did you choose to do and so on. So thank you so much for this time. I wish you a great day and keep in touch.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I really enjoyed sharing and remembering about how I end up here. And yeah, get in touch with if you need anything, if you want to ask more. And thank you. Thank you very much.